Please turn back to that passage in Mark's Gospel, Mark chapter 8, page 1011. Now, I don't know what you're like with words puzzles or picture puzzles. Some people like them, and some people just find them, frankly, annoying. Word wheels, code words, countdown, dingbats, things like that. There's always a good cryptic crossword in the Evening Post on Saturdays, which we generally have a go at. So just about the right level for us, a lot easier than the Times. Maybe prefer this kind of puzzle. Jill, you can now put it on, get it going. Thank you. And I'm sorry this won't come over very well on tape or over the web. And if you don't click it again, it won't come over very well here either. A kind of puzzle where the picture is slowly revealed, one piece at a time, eventually. Right, good. Well, it worked very well in rehearsals, is all I can say. Hey, okay, how soon are you going to recognise the solution? Is the question. And I have to say, I've already been requested once this evening for a copy of this picture. What a work of art it is. So if you want one of those afterwards, I'm sure we can print some off for you and I'll sign them. I don't know what gave it away for you or what point you guessed it, but I'm sure most of you spotted my identity before the end. It wasn't really very difficult. And as long as your eyesight, with or without the aid of glasses, is okay, you will have got there soon enough. The moment came when the little lights went on over your head and you said, "Aha, I know who that is." Piece by piece, the picture came together. Now, when we look here in the Bible and at the first half of Mark's Gospel, we see something very similar to that process. We see a picture that is being assembled piece by piece until the identity of Jesus is made absolutely clear. Chapter by chapter, Mark provides us with more pieces of the jigsaw until it becomes quite obvious who this man really is. Pieces with significant clues on them, like the great miracles that Jesus performs, like the power that he displays over the natural world, like the words that he speaks with such unique authority, telling clues as the picture comes together. It's a journey of discovery that we make as we read this story, a journey that we share with Jesus' followers, the disciples. We've nearly reached the halfway point of Mark's Gospel now. And we're nearly at the point where they finally reach that aha moment. The penny drops and they grasp who Jesus really is. And Jesus, of course, is not just a face on a screen or even just a character from history. Most of us here are able and glad to say that knowing Jesus as he really is has transformed our lives. We're glad to say that the moment when we saw Jesus clearly was the key moment of our lives and the most important discovery that we ever made. But you may not have reached that moment for yourself just yet. You may not have had that aha moment. Not everyone sees this man clearly. Not everyone can identify him. There are plenty of people who got hold of a few chunks of the puzzle and put them together in the most bizarre ways. Not everyone even wants to know him. But this is what we're about this evening, getting a clear view of the most significant figure in human history. And this story tonight takes us closer to the answer. Last time we looked at Mark's Gospel, which was 3 weeks ago, I'm afraid, we found Mark telling us that these disciples are actually incredibly slow to see the picture. Let's put this on the screen again, this structure. This is the way that Mark deliberately sets out his gospel from the middle of chapter 6 to the end of chapter 8. The pieces of the picture begin to fit together. So from the middle of chapter 6, Jesus feeds a huge crowd. He argues with his opponents. He heals an incurable man and he draws out a confession of faith. All that happens in front of their eyes. Jesus walks the disciples through it, but they don't get it. And because they are so slow, Jesus takes them round the whole cycle again. So there is another great feeding miracle, which is what we looked at last time. Another row with the Pharisees. Another healing before finally we get to the aha moment when Peter himself realizes who this man really is. Jesus walks them through all of that again because, frankly, the disciples are acting like spiritual half-wits. So last time we looked at the catering project part two, the miracle we know as the feeding of the 4,000. It's almost a rerun of the feeding of the 5,000. It's definitely a separate event and the details are quite different. But still, it's the story of Jesus feeding a great crowd in a miraculous way. But as we see today, the disciples still don't see the picture, even second time round. They're spiritual half-wits. And the question for us is, are we just the same? Are you missing out on recognizing Jesus when you already possess all the evidence that you need? We finished last time with the Pharisees, Jesus' opponents, insisting that he produce some special sign that will demonstrate God's approval of him. Give us a sign from heaven, they demand. But Jesus has no truck with this. He's exasperated. He says, in effect, you've seen enough. And if you still reject me, it's only because you refuse to see what is there in front of your eyes. The Pharisees are hardened and blind. And Jesus simply turns his back and leaves. He wastes no more time on them. Could there be someone here tonight who is as closed and hardened as that? So we pick up the story with Jesus in the boat with his disciples setting off once more to cross Lake Galilee. And as soon as they've pushed off from land, the sail has been set and they're on their way across the water. The conversation begins. Verse 14, the disciples had forgotten to bring bread except for one loaf they had with them in the boat. Be careful, Jesus warned them. Watch out for the yeast of the Pharisees and that of Herod. Quite likely, Jesus is sitting there in the boat looking back at the group of Pharisees left behind on the shore. You see those guys? He says. Well, watch out for the yeast of those men. And watch out for Herod, who's the tinpot ruler of this territory. Now, what would the disciples have made of this saying? What is this about yeast? It sounds odd to us. But yeast was quite regularly used to mean something or someone with a pervasive undercover influence, just as the yeast in bread making spreads its unseen influence throughout the dough. And yeast could be used as a picture of sin, of evil, which spreads its sinister effects everywhere. So when Jesus talks about the yeast of the Pharisees, he means, watch out for the evil influence of their teaching. Watch out for the effect they could have on you. It's a warning against the kind of hypocrisy which they've just seen in the Pharisees, who claim to be open to the truth, but in reality are deliberately blind. In fact, in the Aramaic language which Jesus is originally speaking, there's probably a play on words. We can't be sure which words Jesus originally spoke in that language, but the word for yeast is chamira, and the word for teaching is amira. But in any case, it should be pretty obvious, blindingly obvious to the disciples, what Jesus is talking about. Any of us here in the church should take note of a warning like this. Watch out for hypocrites and don't ever be like them. Keep your integrity, Jesus is saying. But the disciples are simply not on the ball. Instead of picking up what Jesus is really saying, they stop at the word yeast and jump to the conclusion that he must be talking about bread. They're already feeling guilty because they've forgotten to bring any. The leftovers from the last miraculous meal are all finished or past their sell-by date, and the disciples have failed to stock up again. In fact, they have a grand total of one bread roll. Now, here is Jesus going on about yeast. Obviously, they think he's getting at them. They discussed with one another and said, "Well, that's because we have no bread." You can just imagine it. "Oh, John, head in the clouds again. You know, it was your turn to go to Morrison's. What on earth are we going to do with precisely one bun? There's 13 of us." Jesus is trying to communicate spiritual realities, and all they're concerned about is the absence of a packed lunch. Is it surprising that Jesus rebukes them? Verse 17, aware of their discussion, Jesus asked them, "Why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not see or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes but fail to see and ears but fail to hear? And don't you remember?" I'm not talking about bread. Why do you still not get the point of all this? And in Jesus' words here, the disciples, at least if they are listening, will hear the echoes of the Old Testament prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, the prophets who in these words rebuked God's people for failing to understand, failing to listen to him, when they should have known so much better. And Jesus too is a prophet. Once again, like Israel of old, God's people are proving to be blind and deaf. "You've got perfectly good eyes," he says, "but you don't see. You've got perfectly good ears, but apparently you can't hear." In all the time they have been together, these 12 men still haven't drawn the right conclusions about Jesus, and they still don't understand what he tells them. By the way, this is one of the many places in Mark's Gospel where we're obviously dealing with a vivid eyewitness account. No one would ever make up a story like this one. So clearly true to life. And so Jesus goes on. "Don't you remember? When I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000, how many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up?" 12, they replied. "And when I broke the 7 loaves for the 4,000, how many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up?" They answered, 7. He said to them, "Do you still not understand?" Jesus takes them back to those great miracles, the feeding of the 5,000 and then of the 4,000, and he checks their memory. Now, this is not some complex mathematical riddle, as I once used to think. He's simply saying, "Do you remember how it turned out that day?" "You do?" "And that other day, just last week, do you remember that as well?" 7 baskets of leftovers, right? "Good. But what does it all mean?" "You haven't got a clue, have you?" "You remember it so clearly. You remember the clear-up operation down to the last bin bag. But you don't get the point. All those miracles, all that food, all that teaching, and you still don't realise who you are with. You are spiritual half-wits. Do you still not understand?" says Jesus. And the question is for us today, as well as those disciples in the boat on Galilee, do you still not understand? So what on earth will get through to these people? If after all this time, if after all this evidence, they don't see it, what on earth will give them the breakthrough? Good question. And Mark gives us the answer to that question in a very distinctive way. He answers it by telling us the story of a most unusual miracle. A story that Mark alone includes in his gospel, and that's always significant, especially given that Mark's account is the shortest of the four. Even Matthew doesn't include it. Gospel writers didn't randomly cut and paste stories together because they thought they sounded nice. They chose their material for very deliberate reasons. And this story is here for a very good reason, as we'll see. No doubt, after that conversation about the bread, there's a stunned or embarrassed silence in the boat as the shamefaced disciples navigate across the lake and bring the boat into shore. This time at Bethsaida, which is right up at the northern end of Lake Galilee. And almost at once, as it happens so often, a man is brought to Jesus for him to heal. A blind man, led along by his friends, who beg Jesus to touch him, to make that physical contact which they believe will bring healing. Maybe this will be another routine sort of miracle, if healing a man from blindness could ever be called routine. But no, this is not going to be routine. First of all, Jesus takes his hand and leads him away from the village. Bethsaida, in fact, is not one of those tiny fishing villages. It's a big place with a population of over 10,000, and it's bustling, it's noisy, it's a town that's expanded dramatically in recent years. And Jesus wants to get this blind man away from the crowds, partly because he wants the man to have a chance to hear what he says, and partly because he has a special audience in mind. Not the crowd in general, but his slow disciples. They really need to see this. Usually when Jesus has healed someone, it happens instantly and it happens completely. In fact, it's been a mark of his miracles up to this point. They appear effortless. He heals with a word. He calms the storm with a word. He multiplies bread simply by dividing it and watching it grow. But this time it's different. You see what happens here. Verse 23, he took the blind man by the hand and led him outside the village. When he had spat on the man's eyes and put his hands on him, Jesus asked, "Do you see anything?" In a quiet spot outside the town, in full view of the disciples, Jesus goes to work. Spitting on the man's eyes sounds pretty distasteful, frankly. But just like he did before with the deaf-mute man at the end of chapter 7, Jesus is conducting a mime, which the man will be able to understand. In that other case, Jesus used visual signals and touch because the man could see but not hear or speak. This man can't see, but he can hear and he can speak. So Jesus does something that he can hear and feel. And then he talks to him. Jesus meets the man at the point where he is. Jesus will always do that. So far, this is much like what we've seen before. But now listen to what the man says. He looked up and said, "I see people. They look like trees walking around." Hang on, hasn't Jesus just laid hands on this man and healed him? Apparently not. Apparently he can now see, but only in the vaguest outlines. Presumably he knows what a tree looks like. Either he's been able to see at some point in his life, or he can imagine a tree from what others have told him. But in any case, when he looks at the people in front of him, they don't look like people. Vertical shapes, outlines of figures, barely distinct, all looking the same. Cannot yet see clearly. The picture he sees makes no sense. So once more, Jesus places his hands on the man's eyes. And now, at once, the man is healed and he can see. And he looks around, sight fully restored. Everything is clear and sharp. All is well. So what has happened here? Did Jesus run out of power to do miracles at the first attempt? So that he now takes him two goes? Did he somehow forget how to do it? Of course not. So why go through this strange two-step process of tackling blindness? He does it for one simple reason, to point to the blindness of his audience, the disciples. For all that he has done for them so far, for all that they've been involved in his ministry, the miracles, the teaching, as yet all they can see is like trees walking. The picture they see makes no sense. Back on the boat,
Jesus issued a threefold rebuke of his disciples for their half-wittedness, their inability to see clearly. Don't you understand? Don't you comprehend? Are your hearts hardened? Three times. And now, here in Bethsaida, there is a threefold description of this man's restoration. His eyes are opened. His sight is restored. He sees everything clearly. And this is what it's all about. The only way they will be able to see straight is if Jesus heals their sight. The only way through is for him to do one more miracle and open their eyes. Only God can open the eyes of the spiritually blind. Only God can open our eyes. What on earth will get through to these people? This is the answer. What on earth will get through to you? The answer is the same. Could it be that you are just like these disciples? You've seen and heard so much about Jesus, maybe for many years. You know the stories. Maybe even if you were asked, you too would know all the details of the stories about Jesus. How many people he fed? How many baskets of scraps? Because you've been through it all before. Maybe you grew up with it. You know the Bible stories, the miracles, the teaching. You think you know, but you don't know him. It's as if all you can see is like trees walking, a vague sensation, there's something out there. And you don't really see Jesus at all. What is Jesus to you? Just a prophet? Just a good teacher? Someone whose teachings you think you might like to follow? Just a miracle worker? But the Gospels reveal Jesus to us as God's unique revelation. The God-man who stepped into this world to be God with us, giving us his life, saving us through his death. The one who was God with the half-witted disciples in the boat on the lake. The one who was God as he healed the blind man. The one who will come to you as God and transform your life. Have you got there yet? Has this miracle happened to you? You can ask him and he will show you, just as he is doing to people all around the world today. People from every background and every religion are seeing Jesus clearly for the first time today. And you can ask him today to make himself clear to you. We're about to share communion together. Communion which shows us clearly and graphically what Jesus came to do. If you don't know him, or if you haven't seen the picture yet, why not take the opportunity to wait and pray for his touch on your life that will make you see at last.